Okay, you can start. Tavakasha, thank you very much.
Very good. Welcome back, everyone. I'll just begin by reviewing some of the things that we saw last week. In the beginning, I pointed out that there is this general feeling that the mitzvot do not have any reasons for them in the Torah, and that this is a problem, and that actually there are quite a few mitzvot that do have reasons, but there are many different kind of definitions of what a reason is. A reason could be the benefit that will accrue to me from observing the mitzvah. It could be the reward that I'm getting, or something that happened in history could be one of the reasons. So the reasons for mitzvot that one finds in the Torah are of many different kinds. We talked about the fact that there has been, and we'll continue to see this, there's been a certain amount of opposition to ta'amei ha-mitzvot all through the years, that there are concerns. We saw a text from Norman Lamb, Zichrono Libracha, that talked about how the ta'am of the mitzvah is really just the taste of the mitzvah. The people look for ta'amei mitzvot because it makes it easier to swallow the mitzvah, but we shouldn't think that that's actually the purpose of the mitzvah. We don't know what the purpose of the mitzvah is. And there's when you say that you know what the purpose of the mitzvah is, there are two possible dangers. One of them is that you're wrong, and that one day, instead of thinking that Brit Milah is because there's our health benefits that accrue to someone who is circumcised, and you can still find people making that argument today. But then, what happens when somebody comes along and says, "Well, actually, the latest studies show that isn't the case." So, coming up with a ta'am that might be time related and it might not last through the generations is problematic. And the other problematic thing is when you say what the purpose of the mitzvah is, somebody can say, "Okay, I accept that that's the purpose, but I think that I can accomplish that same purpose without observing the mitzvah." And so that's, those are some of the dangers that are involved in ta'amei mitzvot. We moved on from there to considering the question, do all mitzvot actually have ta'amim? And we saw that Rashi says that a chok is a mitzvah she'ein lo ta'am. And he says this more than once in his commentary on the Torah, that there is no reason for observing this mitzvah. Ramban doesn't like this. Ramban says, of course, there is a ta'am. The only definition of a chok is a mitzvah that we don't understand what the ta'am is, but of course, there certainly has to be a ta'am. And Rambam also said that the definition of a chok is a law, she'ein ta'amam yadua. We just don't know what the reason is for the mitzvah. So that's a review of the text that we saw last time, and I'm going to share my screen and move on to, we began to look at this text last time, and we will discuss it some more now from the Rambam for the Guide of the Perplexed. And everybody knows we read the Guide of the Perplexed in English because he wrote it in Judeo-Arabic, and so there's no particular reason to read it in Hebrew because the English translation is just as good as the Hebrew translation. There are people who feel that it is a grievous matter to provide reasons for any mitzvah. What they would prefer would be that there would be no understandable aspect of any mitzvah or prohibition. What brings them to this position is the sickness that they have in their soul. Strong language. There's a problem. It's a psychological problem with people who think that it's good that there not be any reasons for the mitzvot. One that they cannot articulate and they don't really understand. Dr. Rambam, I'm going to explain to them what problem they're having that they don't really understand that they're having it. They think that if these mitzvot actually accomplish something in this world, and that is why they were commanded to us, then it would be as if these laws originated from some human mind. That means, well, you know, if I give tzedakah because it makes sense to give tzedakah because there are all sorts of poor people around. If that's the reason for giving it, well, there's nothing particularly divine about it. It's just, it's human. And we want the Torah, according to these people who Rambam is disagreeing with, we want the Torah to be divine. Rambam goes on. But if a law has no rational basis for it and leads to no particular goal, then it certainly originates from God, as no human being would ever suggest something like that. That's the argument of the people that Rambam disagrees with. For these weak-minded people, it is as if humans were more perfect than God. Since humans say things that have some useful end, some purpose to them, well, God does not do that. He commands us to do things that have no useful end for us, and he commands us not to do various things that wouldn't harm us in any way. God forbid, says Rambam, actually it is the other way around. That, of course, God has figured out this world and what's good for us in this world better than human beings have figured this out. And so, the divine wisdom helps us behave in the correct manner. So this is Rambam's position. We saw this last week. I'm going through it quickly. And then we also saw what the Gemara says about the mitzvah of shiluach haken, of sending away the mother bird. I'll just read it in English the same time. If along the road you chance upon a bird's nest in any tree or on the ground with fledglings or eggs and the mother sitting over the fledglings or on the eggs, do not take the mother together with her young. Let the mother go and take only the young in order that you may fare well and have a long life. So there's a mitzvah. There's a reason given here. The reason isn't why we were asked specifically to do this, but there's a result here that why should I do this if somebody says, well, you should do it because you'll fare well and you will have a long life. But why should I be doing this? So we saw last time, this was towards the end of the class last time, the session last time, we saw the Mishnah that says, Ha'omer al kan tzipor yagiu rachamecha mishatkim oto, a person who says when davening, may your mercy extend to us, the way that it extended to a bird's nest is silenced. And then there are two explanations in the Gemara about why we silence a person like this. Two rabbis in Eretz Yisrael argued about this. Rabbi Yossi, the son of Abin, and Rabbi Yossi, the son of Zavida, once said, because it suggests that God gives preferential treatments to some, but not all of his creatures. There's a law like this about birds, but there isn't a law like this about other animals. So this is Matil Kinab Maaseh Bereshit, saying that some creatures are more important than other creatures. And the other one said, because it explains God's laws, or perhaps God's attributes, Midotav Shalakadosh Baruch Hu, we could understand it either way, as examples of mercy when they are really just decrees. So it looks like the second Rabbi Yossi here is saying that the problem with a prayer like this is that it is attributed a motive to the law, and there isn't a motive. It's not, it isn't there because of rachamim. It has nothing to do with rachamim. It is just a gezerah. It is a decree that came from God. Okay, so here we have a clear statement of the existence of mitzvot, where it is simply a gzeirah, or so it will seem. We'll see other people relating to it in a different way. And then we see that Rambam, actually, in his halachic work, he says that that is the halacha. Misha amar b'tachanunim, misha rechem al kan tzipor, shalo dikach ha'im al abanim, o shalo dishchot oto ve'at beno b'yom echad yirachem aleinu v'kayotze b'inyan hazeh, mishatkim oto. If anybody says, may God have mercy on us, the way he had a mercy on this bird's nest, you silence a person like that. That's an illegitimate prayer. A Jew should not be praying in that way. Why? Rambam says, mipnei shemitzvot elu gezerat ha'katuv heim ve'inan rachamim. She'ilu hayu mipnei rachamim lo haya matir lanu shechita kol ikar. And it looks here as if Rambam is combining the two explanations from the Gemara, the two explanations of the two Rabbi Yossis. First of all, these are just gezerat hakatuv. This is a decree. This is what the scripture decreed for us. Einan rachamim. It doesn't have anything to do with mercy. Because if it had anything to do with mercy, then there would have to be a law like this about all animals and not just about birds. So Rambam seems to be saying here that that this law does not have any purpose to it. But then, okay, so that we saw last time, and we did not, this is the first text that we're seeing for the first time today, Rambam in the guide, what does he say in the guide of the perplexed about Shiluach HaKen, about sending away the mother bird? The same reason, he says, applies to the law which enjoins us that we should let the mother bird fly away when we take the young. The eggs upon which the bird sits and the young are in need of their mother, are generally unfit for food. And when the mother is sent away, she does not see the taking of her young ones and doesn't feel any pain. The mother bird would feel pain if she saw you taking the eggs and her young. So in most cases, however, this commandment will cause people to leave the whole nest untouched, because the young or the eggs which they are allowed to take are, as a rule, unfit for food. From a halachic perspective, it's interesting that Rambam is saying this, that the result will be, if you tell the person that they have to send away the mother bird, then they're not, they're likely to say, oh, just forget it. I know that there are some halachists who say that if you come across a bird's nest with a mother on it, there's a mitzvah actually to send away the mother bird and to take the young, or to take the to take the eggs. And Rambam is saying here that the whole purpose of this is to cause the human being who sees this to say, okay, I'm not going to take anything here. And then Rambam says, if the law provides that such grief should not be caused to birds, how much more careful must we be that we should not cause grief to our fellow men? And so the Torah is telling us, don't make birds sad. Don't make that mother bird sad. And kal vachomer, that we shouldn't make other human beings sad. Now, Rambam writes here, when in the Talmud, those who use in their prayer the phrase, your mercy extends to young birds, are blamed, when it says in the Gemara, in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, that that's not a legitimate prayer, this is the expression of one of the two opinions mentioned by us, namely, that the precepts of the law have no reason other than the divine will. We follow the other opinion. So Rambam says, I know, so you might say that the explanation that I just gave here goes against the Gemara. And I'm saying to you, yeah, I know that it goes against the Gemara, but I told you already that there are two schools of thought about mitzvot. One school of thought says that they all have reasons, and the other school of thought says that they don't have reasons. And I follow the school of thought that says that they all have reasons. And the Gemara there, so first of all, it's shocking. You remember what he said about that school of thought, that the people who think this way have a certain sickness in their soul when they, if they think that way. And now he's saying that those rabbis in the Gemara and the Bavli who said this are subscribe to that opinion, that the mitzvot do not have any purpose to it. So that's shocking in and of itself. But then we have the further problem of the contradiction here between what Rambam said in his halachic work in the Mishnah Torah and Hilchot Tfilah, that it says you can't say a prayer like this, and the reason is because these laws are decrees. And then in the Guide of the Perplexed, he says that's the opinion that I don't subscribe to, the opinion of the people who think that the mitzvot don't have any purpose to them, but we follow the other opinion. So what's happening here? I wish that I could tell you that I am going to give you a perfect solution to solve this contradiction in the Rambam, but I'm telling you ahead of time that I'm not going to, but I will give you a few possible ways of relating to this. Way number one is that Rambam could have changed his mind, and that he wrote the Mishnah Torah when he was in his 30s, and he wrote the Guide of the Perplexed when he was in his 50s. a number of years had gone by, and I don't know how many of you listening to this shiur are in your 50s or older than that, but people who are in their 50s know that they don't always agree with the things that were said, that they agreed with in their 30s. So it could be the Rambam has been thinking about this over the years. That's possibility number one. Possibility number two is that, people joke that there's Maimonides and there's Urmonides, there are all these different Rambams out there, and there's the Rambam that I like, and there's the Rambam that you like, and you might like the Rambam of the Mishneh Torah, and somebody else likes the Rambam of the Moreh Nevuchim. And in the most radical formulation of this, there are two radical formulations of this. One of them, radical philosophers say that the Rambam wrote a halachic work to get his credentials as a halachist, but that this is really what the Rambam thinks. The Guide of the Perplexed, that's the real Maimonides, that's his real thought. This is just, for the frumis, he wrote the Mishneh Torah. The opposite radical perspective is the Mishneh Torah is the real Rambam. The Guide of the Perplexed, if you read the introduction to the Guide of the Perplexed, Rambam had one student whose name was Rav Yosef ben Rav Yehuda, who was feeling perplexed and who had decided that and was troubled by what he saw as the contradictions between philosophy and Torah. And so Rambam wrote a book. The ruse is that he's writing this book just for this one student, that this one student wanted to understand the conflict between philosophy and Torah. And so he's writing for him. And that what he's saying here, according to this radical interpretation, this is in the Mishneh Torah, that's what he really believes. And when he's talking to this this troubled student of his, he says things that he doesn't totally go along with, because he's trying to deal with somebody who might be about to go off the derech because he's attracted to philosophy. And so he says this. So those are the two radical ways of formulating this. You can also say, I know about myself, not that I'm comparing myself to the Rambam, Chas v'Shalom, but I know sometimes I teach the same text in a lot of different places, at York University, at Congregation B'nai Torah in Toronto, at Beit Knesset Boyer here in Jerusalem, for Torah in Motion, at the Yemei Iyun B'Tanach at Gush Etzion here in Israel. I think there are texts that I can say that I've taught in all of those locations. And do I always say the same thing in every location? Of course not, because I try to take in as far as I understand it, I try to take in mind what the audience is. And so now I would say that people still generally try to avoid contradicting themselves. And so this doesn't necessarily solve this contradiction here, but Rambam is writing for two different audiences. And it's interesting that he didn't have to go into the Ta'am here in the halachic text. A halacha, in the same way that we have the problem that the Torah doesn't always explain what the Ta'amim are, also in halachic literature, the default is that there isn't any Ta'am. I talked about this last week, that the Criminal Code of Canada and other countries doesn't have any reasons for the laws. And so Rambam could have just written that Misha Marba Tachanunim Mishatkim Oto. He didn't have to write Mipnei Sheh, the second part of this statement, for these laws are decrees. He didn't have to write that, but he wrote this, and so that's what makes this into a bigger kind of problem. Okay, we'll get back to the Rambam when we go on and see what Ramban says about this same text. But just to do something fun Before we go to Ramban, I just thought I would share with you a very creative explanation of Shiluach HaKen, of the mitzvah of sending away the mother bird by Shatal, Shmuel David Luzzatto, 1800 to 1865 in Italy. Here's his explanation of the purpose of this mitzvah. A lot of people like this a lot. A lot of people don't like it. If you don't like it, that's just fine. But whether you like it or not, it's creative. He says, read it in English. When a person approaches a bird's nest, the mother bird, were it not for her compassion for her young, would flee to save herself and would abandon her young. We all know, if you see a bird, the human being sees a bird, and the bird sees the human being coming towards the bird. What does the bird do? The bird flies away. So we know you can't get terribly close to a bird. But Shadal says that the reason that what happens when a bird is sitting on her young and you walk close to it, it doesn't fly away because it wants to protect its young. However, says Shadal, due to her love for her young, she keeps herself in danger in her attempt to save them. She doesn't flee to save herself. So if you're ever walking towards a bird's nest and the mother bird is protecting her young, the mother bird will be torn between her desire to save herself from this human being who's walking towards her and her desire to save her young. So Shadal goes on, accordingly, it isn't appropriate to take the mother bird. If a person were to take her, then the act of kindness and love that she extended to her young would be her undoing. That if I see a mother bird and I know, aha, I am going to be able to catch the mother bird because she's protecting her young, and I'm going to walk over there and I am going to catch her because I'm going to take advantage of the fact that she has compassion for her young. The Torah, according to Shadal, does not want you to do that. It doesn't want you to have the to learn the lesson. It's worried that you will learn the lesson that compassion is something bad. And so if you had the possibility of doing this, you would learn, you see, when you have compassion, you end up dying. And the Torah doesn't want you to do that. Okay, as I said, you can either like this or not like it. And if you don't like it, then you are in good company, because Nechama Leibovich wrote about this this explanation here. I'll tell you in advance. I consider myself a student of Nechama Leibovich. In the beginning of my career, I used to tell people when I'd start teaching a Chumash class, I would say, if anything that I say in this class is any good, I probably learned it from Nechama Leibovich. If anything isn't any good, it's probably something that I made up on my own, and I'm not going to give any footnotes because most of my Torah was from Nechama. As the years went on, I branched out in my own direction about various things. And on this, I don't understand why Nechama is so upset about this comment of Shadal. And I'll just point out for those of you who have the books of Nechama Leibovich, this is not in her English translation of the Iyunim. The English translation of the Iyunim, the studies in Deuteronomy, they did not translate the entire Hebrew text. So this is my translation of what she wrote here in the Hebrew volume. The purpose, here we are. Shadal's approach appears to us to be an example of a totally improper way of explaining to Amei HaMitzvot, a way that is more likely to harm than to help. That's, you know, Alula lahazik velo lahoil, says Nechama. So you can see Tameh mitzvot is sometimes a blood sport, you know, that somebody, Shadal tries to give you an explanation here that you think that he thinks will help you understand the purpose of the Torah, and Nechama is convinced that there's something bad about this. She quotes Shadal, and then she goes on. When we read his words, a profound question is raised. Can we really educate to mercy and compassion on the weak by showing that such behavior is worthwhile? Is that why we're supposed to be compassionate? Because it's worthwhile to be compassionate? Will we really succeed in teaching our students and children to be compassionate, to give in to others, to be merciful to those whom we control by proving to them that compassion does not lead to loss? And she goes on, those of you who have the Hebrew volumes, she goes on for a few more sentences of bashing Shadal about this. You know, I feel as if Nechama has created a straw man argument here, and that isn't what Shadal is saying. The way I understand what Shadal is saying is that, to use the language that is used here in Israel these days, one of the biggest mitzvot for many Israelis is don't be a friar. Don't let somebody take advantage of you. And what Shadal is saying here is that you might learn that when you are compassionate, you are going to be taken advantage of. And in order, it's not that Shadal isn't arguing that we're going to learn compassion from Shiluach HaKen, but he's worried that if you're allowed to take the mother bird, you're going to learn a dangerous lesson. You're going to learn the lesson that when you show compassion, you have a price. There's a price to pay for compassion, and you're not going to want to be compassionate. And so I think that that's all that Shadal is saying. And for those who have studied Shadal, compassion, chemla, is like the theme running through the Torah according to Shadal. And Shadal was worried that if you have the opportunity of taking a mother bird because she is showing her compassion for her young, then you would learn that compassion isn't a good thing. And there are other texts that teach us, according to Shadal, that compassion is a good thing. Okay, so that's just a little side on a different understanding of the purpose behind the mitzvah of sending away the mother bird. Okay, Ramban has a very long comment, which will go on for a few slides here, and I made it shorter than it really is, but we'll try to read through his comment here. The mitzvah of releasing the mother bird is also an elaboration of a previous mitzvah. Ramban says that most of what appears in Sefer Dvarim is a repetition or an elaboration of something that was written beforehand in a previous biblical book. And he said, this one too, this isn't different from the mitzvah of Oto ve'et beno lo tishchatu biyom echad, not to slaughter the mother animal and its young on the same day. They both have the same purpose, that we should not have a cruel and merciless heart. Levilti heyot lanu lev achzari v'lo nerachim. That the purpose is, so this is Ramban, Moshe ben Nachman, in the 13th century, is writing this, and he knows what the Gemara said about mercy, and he's going to relate to that in the continuation of his comments. But the purpose of this law is that we should not become cruel and merciless. In the guide, Rambam wrote that this mitzvah and the mitzvah not to slaughter the mother and her young on the same day are so that the young not be slaughtered while the mother looks on, so that we do not behave cruelly, that we do not give this kind of cruel experience to an animal. Rambam said that we should not raise an objection to what he wrote, since in the Talmud it says, those who use in their prayers the phrase, your mercy extends to young birds, are blamed. It is the expression of one of the two opinions mentioned by us, namely that the precepts of the law have no reason other than the divine will. We follow the other opinion. So he's saying, he's just quoting the Rambam that we saw beforehand. And then, I didn't show you the entire Rambam there. Rambam also considered what he found in Breshit Rabbah a problem. There it says, what does, b'chima echpat lo, I'll read this in Hebrew because we'll get back to the wording here very soon. B'chima echpat lo lahakadosh baruch hu ben shochet min hatzavar l'shochet min ha'oref. What does God care whether you slaughter an animal from the front of the neck or from the back of the neck? And the continuation of that text in Bereshit Rabbah is, ha lo nitnu ha-mitzvot, ela letzaref bahem et habriyot, sheneemar kol imrat eloha tzerufa. And I purposely did not translate every word here because it's a question of how to understand the words here in the Hebrew text. What does the Blessed Holy One care whether people slaughter from the front of the neck or slaughter from the back? The mitzvot were given only litzarif people, as it is written. Every word of God is tzerufa. So what does it mean, litzarif? So the common usage of the word litzarif in modern Hebrew is to bring together, but that's not the usage here. That's not the biblical usage. And I don't think that you can interpret that comment in Breshit Rabbah in that way. And Rambam felt, as Ramban says here, that Rambam considered that a problem. Rambam said that that line in Breshit Rabbah goes according to the opinion that not all the mitzvot have reasons, but I follow the opinion. He says, Rambam says, there's a machloket, there's a dispute in Jewish circles about whether all the mitzvot have a reason or not. And Rambam quotes this line and says, this is somebody who thinks that there's no reason to it. And how is Rambam understanding the verb litzaref here? He's understanding it, I would say, the way it appears in this verse in Tehillim, Bachanta libi, pakadata laila, Seraftani bal timtza. It's a dispute about how to understand this verse, but there's no dispute about how to understand the word seraftani, which is parallel. This is a biblical parallelism. It's parallel to the word bachanta. You have visited me at night. You have probed my mind. The JPS translation says, you have tested me and found nothing amiss. That's how JPS understands the phrase, the Jewish Publication Society translation understands the phrase, Seraftani Baltimtza, you tested me and you found nothing amiss. Rashi and Radak say the opposite. They say that Seraftani means you tested me, Baltimtza. Rashi says, Lo matzata bi cheftzecha, I failed the test. That's what Rashi is saying, that this is David HaMelech saying, I failed the test that you gave me, God. And Radak says the same thing. Tziraftani velo mitzaatani naki. You tested me and you did not find me innocent. So whatever baltimtza means, everybody here, the moderns and the medievals, they're all saying that tziraftani means to test. In other words, Rambam understands the line here, that nidnu ha-mitzvot, lo nidnu ha-mitzvot, ela letzaref bahem et abriyot, the mitzvot were only given as a test to people. That really, God doesn't care, as it says here, whether you slaughter an animal from the front of the neck or the back of the neck. It's just a test to see whether you will do it the right way. You know, for the teachers in the group, like Rabbi Kelman and myself, you know, when we give tests, we like to think that we're making the test into a learning experience, but that's not what they're talking about here. They're talking about just a test to make sure that the person is observing the law the way they should be observing the law. That's how Rambam understands this phrase, letzaref et habriyot. Ramban quotes that's what Rambam says about this. But then Ramban goes on and says, Rambam's claim that the mitzvot all have a reason is true. Each of them has a reason and purpose of improving people. In fact, I agree with Rambam, says Ramban. I agree that every mitzvah has a purpose to it, aside from the benefit of the reward that is received from God. That it's not just Laman Yarichun Yamecha. It's not just because you will get a reward from God, but intrinsically, Ramban says, I believe that every mitzvah has a purpose of improving people. And that is what they taught about the Parah Aduma, the red heifer, that God said to Moshe, to you, I shall explain its reason, to others it shall remain a chukah. Thus they made explicit that our lack of understanding of any mitzvah is only a result of the impoverished nature of our minds. Even the reason of the most difficult of the mitzvot was revealed to the sages of Israel. There are many assertions of this nature in rabbinic literature. Many verses of the Bible teach this, and Rambam already mentioned some of them. Ramban is saying, of course, Rambam is right, that all of the mitzvot have a reason to them, but he's going to go on to say, there isn't a machloket. Rambam said there's a machloket, that there are some people in the rabbinic tradition who think that there are mitzvot that have no purpose to them, and some people think that they do. Ramban said, no, there is no machloket about this. When I was in yeshiva, I studied in yeshivat Merkaz HaRav Kook, I remember being taught by one of my teachers, ein machloket be'emunah, that, you know, there's machlokot in the Gemara everywhere, but when it comes to inyanei emunah, there aren't any machlokot between the rabbis. That's not the way I teach. I don't teach that. That's not a university kind of approach to say that all of the thinkers actually agree with each other. But that's what Ramban is arguing here, that this is an accepted principle of all Jewish thinkers, that of course all of the mitzvot have a reason to them. But what about the text that Rambam cited that seemed to suggest that some of the mitzvot do not have a reason to them, but the agadot that Rambam found problematic for his preferred approach, that the mitzvot all have reasons? They're making a different point, that the benefit of mitzvot does not accrue to God, that God doesn't benefit from the mitzvot. That's all that these texts are saying. The mitzvot are beneficial for the people who perform them themselves. And now he gives his list. Interesting list. Ramban says that every mitzvah has one of the following, depends how you count them, four or five things as the purpose to it. Either to keep them away from damage, or from improper belief, or from improper behavior, or to remember the miracles performed by God, and to know God. Let's look at that in Hebrew. Hatoelet ba'adam atzmo, limno mimenu nezek, o emunara'a, o mida meguna, o lizkor hanisim v'niflaot habore yitbarach, v'ladad et Hashem. So every mitzvah has one of those purposes, and all of those purposes, you notice, are for me. That when I do it, it will keep me away from damage, it will keep me from an improper belief, it will keep me from improper behavior, it'll help me remember the miracles performed by God, it will help me know God, so I will be the one who benefits from it. And all that the rabbis were trying to say is that God does not benefit from the observing of mitzvot. It isn't something that does anything for him. And just wanted to point out this list that Ramban gives. Ramban, of course, read the Guide to the Perplexed. Ramban gives a not such a different list of what the purpose of the laws are. The law as a whole aims at two things, the welfare of the soul and the welfare of the body. As for the welfare of the soul, it consists of the multitude acquiring correct opinions corresponding to their respective capacity. So I know that the multitude aren't going to understand everything about the world, but the Torah is trying to teach them what they have to know, what they have to believe about this world, including that there is one God and things of this nature, that it's necessary that everybody, including the multitude, understand. And the welfare of the body is achieved through two things, the abolition of the wrongdoing to each other, the acquisition by every human individual of moral qualities that are useful for life and society, and so that the affairs of the city should be ordered. So the idea is that I should have the right ideas in my head, the right beliefs in my head. And this is accomplished by being sure that I live in a society where people aren't hurting each other, where people are behaving to each other. Every human individual has moral qualities that's causing him or her to behave properly to someone else. And the city, the community is organized in such a way. Rambam says this more than once. Here's another text that is, the commandments we understand easily have three possible purposes: abolishing reciprocal wrongdoing, urging to a noble moral quality, leading to a good social relationship, or communicating a correct opinion that ought to be believed. Notice that this list is a little shorter than Ramban's list of what the purpose of all the mitzvot are, but it's not so different. But as for the mitzvot that at first glance don't have explanations of this nature, you will hear my explanation for all of them, with sole exceptions of details. Rambam says in the guide, I won't be able to explain the details of every mitzvah, but in general, every mitzvah, and particular mitzvot. My Judeo-Arabic is weak, but I looked up in the new new Hebrew translation of the guide, an excellent translation by Professor Michael Schwartz, Zichrono Livracha, from Tel Aviv University, who translated that phrase as mitzvot bodedot. There are a couple of mitzvot that I'm not going to be able to explain, just a few here and there that I'm not going to be able to explain, but if you read the third part of the Guide of the Perplexed, you'll see the explanation of almost every mitzvah. I shall explain that all are indubitably related to one of the three notions referred to, either to the welfare of a belief, or to the welfare of the conditions of the city, which is achieved through two things: abolition of reciprocal wrongdoing and acquisition of excellent characters, turning people into having better characters, being more noble, being more compassionate. That's going to make the city better, and making sure that people can't harm each other. So that, as I said, that's a shorter list than Ramban gave of what the purpose of all the mitzvot are: to keep them away from damage or from improper belief or improper behavior, or to remember the miracles performed by God and to know God. But you could say that when Rambam says that you're supposed to have proper beliefs, that would include believing in the miracles performed by God and knowing God. Anyways, now back to Ramban. Now he's going to explain what letzaref et habriyot means in that text that he quoted, that what does God care whether you slaughter the animal from the front of the neck or the back of the neck? And then it says, lo nidnu ha-mitzvot ela letzaref et habriyot. And that is what the text means when it says the mitzvot were given only letzaref people. It means that people should become like refined silver. That's another meaning of the word letzaref. It means to refine something. People who refine silver are not performing a purposeless process. They are trying to remove the dross. That's why you put the silver into the fire, to improve it. So also the mitzvot are intended to remove from our minds any incorrect belief and to teach us the truth and to help us remember it always. So when it says, lo nitnu ha-mitzvot ela letzaref et habriyot, it means to improve, to refine, to make people better in the same way that we refine a metal. And that's what was meant by the word letzaref here. And this also is a biblical use of the verb letzaref. In Yeshayahu, he says, Vashiva yadi alaich, va'etzrof kabor sigayich, va'asira kol bedilayich, va'shiva shoftayich kvarishona v'yotzayich kvatchila. I'll turn my hand against you, and I will smelt out your dross as with lye. That's a cleaning that God is saying here, that he's going to improve the people. He's going to get rid of the dross that's hurting the metal here. I will remove all of your slag, and then I will restore your magistrates as of old. This doesn't mean, so Rambam said, it just meant the test, that it meant that it was meaningless. And Ramban says, no, that isn't what it means. It means that the purpose of all of the mitzvot is to try to make people into better people. And we see that in the Gemara, they understand these two meanings of the word tzaraf. Rabbi Yonatan Rame k'tiv pikudei Hashem yisharim mesamchei lev u'k'tiv imrat Hashem tzerufa. He asked, it says, the precepts of the Lord are upright, they gladden the heart, but it is also written, the word of the Lord is tzerufa. And then he answers, zacha mesamchato, lo zacha tzorafto. He reconciles the verses as follows: for one who is deserving, the Torah gladdens him. For one who is not deserving, it smelts him, which seems to mean closer to the Rambam's understanding, and we'll see in the continuation. Reish Lakish amar migufei dekra nafka zacha tzorafto l'chayim lo zacha tzorafto l'mita. Reish Lakish says, you know, there are two meanings to tzaraf. For one who is deserving, the Torah steals him for life. Tzorafto l'chayim, it makes me better. It gets rid of the dross from me. It gets rid of the bad that I have in me. It makes me into a better person. For one who is not deserving, it smelts him for death. It's like throwing a person into the furnace. You know, there are two things that can happen when you put something in the furnace. You could be improving it, and you could also be, it could be a form of punishment. And so we have these two other, in this saying, lo nidnu ha-mitzvot, ela letzaref et ha-briyot, there are two possible understandings of tzaraf, and the Gemara understands that the biblical root tzaraf has those two meanings attached to it. And then Ramban says, you know, beforehand we were quoting that line about what does God care about, whether the slaughter is done from the front of the neck or from the back of the neck. We were quoting it from Breishit Rabbah, but he says, you can find that same midrash in the Tanchuma, which is sometimes also called the Midrash Yalam Deinu, which is a much later midrash. He says that he prefers the version of the midrash that's found in the Tanchuma. And here's what it says in the Tanchuma. I bolded the added line. V'chima echpat lo la'kadosh baruch hu ben shochet behema v'ochel o nocher v'ochel klum ata mo'ilo o klum ata miziko. What does God care whether we slaughter an animal this way or that way? Do our actions benefit God or harm God in any way? That's all that this text is trying to say, that God doesn't get a benefit from it, but that human beings certainly do. Im chachamta, chachamta lecha, says in Mishlei, halo nidnu ha-mitzvot, ela letzaref et ha-briot, the mitzvot were given letzaref people, and here it seems to be meaning to improve people. So Ramban is making a strong case here that it is important to understand that all of the mitzvot have te'amim, and he's going so far as to say that you can't, that the opinion that Rambam dismissed does not actually appear in rabbinic literature. This text proves explicitly that all that the rabbis were trying to say was that God gets no benefit from the mitzvot, that he does not need the light of the menorah. He doesn't need the food of the sacrifices. He doesn't need the fragrance of the incense, as one might think from the pshat of biblical verses. You just read the Torah, you might get the impression that God needs these things. The purpose of this ma'amar chazal, this rabbinic statement, is to say that God doesn't need these things, but that human beings need these things. And now, finally, Ramban says, so what are we going to do with the line about Kan Tzipor? So also what the rabbi said, because it explains God's laws or perhaps God's attributes as examples of mercy when they are really just decrees, means that God did not have mercy on a bird's nest or in general on animals to stop us from using them for our purposes. I apologize to any vegetarians who may be at the session today, but Ramban is saying here, God did not tell us that it's forbidden for us to use animals for our own purposes. We are allowed to use animals for our own purposes. If he did, he would have forbidden slaughter. Rather, the prohibition is so that we should be merciful, not cruel. That the purpose, that what the Gemara was objecting to was that phrase, Al kan tzipor yagiu rachamecha, which means that God's rachamim extended to the baby birds. No, it's not that God had rachamim on the mother bird or on the baby birds. It's that God wanted us to develop the midah of rachamim, for us to be compassionate people. And so that's Ramban's resolution, and so there is no contradiction. Can we really read Rambam I'm not going to go back to the slide from Rambam from Mishneh Torah. Could we actually get away with reading Rambam in Mishneh Torah as saying the same thing? That all he was trying to say is that the purpose is to turn us into merciful, and not that the purpose is so that it's not because of God's mercy on the birds. I think it would be difficult to say this. Some people have tried to do that, to try to resolve the contradiction in Rambam by saying that's all that he was saying in the text in Mishneh Torah, is that God's mercy does not extend to the birds, and not that it is just a decree. So these laws about animals are not examples of God's mercy on them. Rather, they are decrees for us, to guide us and to teach us to have the proper character traits. All of the commandments of the Torah, positive and negative, are called decrees. And so, this is the final point of Ramban. Calling a mitzvah a gzeirah isn't saying that it doesn't have a reason. A gzeirah just means a decree. Well, God is our king, and if he gives if he makes a law, that is a decree. The word gzeirah does not have to mean a meaningless law. It just means that it is a decree, and it is God decreeing something for us, not for his own benefit. None of these mitzvot are for God's benefit, but they are all for our benefit. And just maybe a little aside here, I remember I taught this text at a Torah in Motion program, I don't know, maybe a dozen years ago, maybe not everybody was there, and I really like this text, and the verse in Dvarim that says, "Ve'etchem lakach Hashem ve'yotzi etchem mikura barzel mimitzrayim liot lo la'am nachala kayom hazeh." But as for you, the Lord took you out and he brought you out of the iron smelting furnace out of Egypt. That we were in an iron smelting furnace when we were in Egypt. And most of the commentators, when they see that phrase, "Kur ha-barzel mi-mitzrayim," they say, it was terrible there in Egypt. We were in the fire all the time. They threw us into the fire there in Egypt. And that's what it means to call call Egypt a Kur Barzel. Except Rabbi Shlomo Ephraim from Lonshitz, just Lagid Davar B'Shem Omro. I learned this text from Professor Uriel Simon, who's one of my favorite Bible scholars here in Israel. I heard him teach this text, and I've taught it many times since then. So Rabbi Shlomo Ephraim from Lonshitz says, he brought you out of the iron smelting furnace, which refines the silver and removes any dross or any impurities, so that the silver becomes clean, pure, and as bright as sunshine. That the experience that the Jewish people had in Egypt was to improve us as a people. That's why you put something into an iron smelting furnace. It's to improve it. So your material was purified by the Egyptian enslavement until it became as bright as the sunshine. So this whole question of what the image of burning something is that seeing this, I'll just quote one more thing in the name of Professor Uriel Simon. He says that nowhere in the Tanakh and almost nowhere in rabbinic literature, he can't say nowhere, but almost nowhere in rabbinic literature is the claim made that we were in Egypt as punishment for some sin. And Professor Simon says that, based on Rav Shlomo Ephraim of Lonshitz, that this is the explanation about why we were there in Egypt, that there was something that we were supposed to learn from the experience of being there in Egypt, and that's what turned us into a people and improved us. Okay, I'm going to stop sharing here. Take a look at the chat, if I can find it and see. What about Barachamav al Kol Masava? Yes. You're right, Ellie, asking about Rachamav al kol ma'asav, but the Gemara there says that that we don't say that there is the purpose of this mitzvah was to have rachamim, because people are allowed to use animals, seems to be what both Rambam and Ramban are saying. So Rabbi Kelman suggests read the Stira and the Rama. Perhaps there is a difference between prayer, where it's asur, and in general, when allowed in the heavenly spirit. In other words, prayer is unknowable, but in the real world, we must give reasons. Yes, I consider that a distinctly possible way of relating to this, that Rambam felt that specifically in prayer, about making this statement in prayer, this is possible. Let's start, Rafe. Okay, Ellie was probably ahead of me at 6:40, giving the, so you gather or to join. I don't think that really it means to gather or to join. Did Rambam feel that Kiddush Hashem is a benefit for God? That's a great question. Is Kiddush Hashem for the benefit of God, or is it for the benefit of humanity, that humanity should learn about God? And I think you can easily argue that Kiddush Hashem is a benefit for human beings, for society, and not for God. Yes, God tested us, as Gershon points out. God tested us in the desert. Totally correct. Ellie suggests that the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKen is a utilitarian one. Only if we need the offspring and we want to take them, then we should take them, we should not take them in the presence of the offspring. This, unlike the many crazy people of today, create a mitzvah parks and have people fulfill the mitzvah for not. Yes, I'm with you on that, Ellie. Yes. Other animals also protect their young, that's true, but other animals can't fly away quite as quickly as birds come. I think that's the, yes. And I'm sorry, I see that somebody said that the network, the bandwidth was low, and I hope that you were able to hear me anyways.
It was fine, the bandwidth, I think.
The bandwidth was okay.
And nobody else said anything. So sometimes individual people have, and since they didn't complain anymore, please God, hopefully it worked for everybody.
Okay. Rabbi Kelman, if you wish to unmute people, feel free.
Yes, I will unmute everybody. You will be unmuted automatically. So if you're talking to your friend right now and you don't want to be heard, make sure you mute yourself. Okay. Okay, yeah, everybody's unmuted now. So if anybody would like to ask a question orally, please feel free.
Feel free.
Marty, I want to say this testing of Bnei Israel in the Midbar, which you've made me aware of now, means the Midbar was like the Kor HaBarzel for us. The,
right.
Kliyakar's Kor HaBarzel.
Yes, I really think that's the suggestion, that the test is there, you know, to test the metal. Is, you know, the English expression that a test does not have to be for a negative purpose. It can be for improvement. I'm not certain that that's what Breishit Rabbah is actually saying.